came back and we said, okay, well, we don't have a program. We need to develop this program. And the ER director at that time, she was like, well, I don't see any reason for doing this, but if you guys want to do that, then you can go ahead and
Really?
do it on
Wow.
your own time. And we said, okay. And not knowing that she was actually violating labor laws by saying, oh yeah, you can take call on your own and you can do this. We won't pay you. And we're like, okay, yeah, we'll do it. Woohoo. And because we were, when you're 24, 25, you don't know anything. And
Right.
so we just knew that, okay, this is something we need to do. And we did it and we built this program. And so we started focusing on, sexual assault patients. And then you get the call at 2 in the morning that says, oh, hey, we have a 5-year-old. Do you do children? And we're like, well, I guess we
Wow.
do now.
Yeah.
And
Right.
so, and it's like, we don't know what we're doing. And so then we figured out what we were doing.
Howdy. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Idea to Impact podcast. Today, we are talking to Dr. Stacy Mitchell, who is a clinical associate professor in the College of Nursing at the Health Science Center here at Texas A&M. Her research includes use of simulation and forensic nursing education and improving the quality and patient safety in forensic nursing care. She is a distinguished fellow in the Academy of Forensic Nursing and president of the Nursing and Forensic Nursing Certification Board. She currently is the principal investigator for a grant issued by the Health Resources Services Administration that is helping to cut down on the amount of time it takes to train forensic nurses so that we can get them out to the areas that really need forensic nurses to help with victims of sexual assault, domestic violence, human trafficking, and elderly abuse, as well as nurses who can help aid in death investigations in places like medical examiner's offices. Today, we're talking about some really important work being done here at A&M that is having a positive and huge impact on our community. Let's get started. Howdy, and welcome or welcome back to the Idea to Impact podcast. Today, I am here with my co-host.
Jack Manhire.
Jack, you're getting rusty. We got to practice this.
Sorry, sorry.
But I'm also joined, we are also joined this week with Stacy Mitchell, who is a clinical associate professor in the College of Nursing at the Health Science Center. And her research interests include use of simulation and forensic nursing education, and then quality and patient safety improvements in forensic nursing care. She is currently a distinguished fellow in the Academy of Forensic Nurses, I believe. And then she's also president of the Nursing and Forensic Certification Board. And I probably messed some of those up, but I counted it up, and Dr. Mitchell has definitely has more initials after her last name than I do. So,
Does she have more initials after her last name than in her name? Like is
yes,
her suffix
she has more
longer than
letters
her
after
name?
her name than in her name.
That's pretty impressive.
And we're gonna go over some of those today, or we'll touch on some of those, both when you're telling us your background and then talking to us about the research that you're doing. So kick us off by telling us, when did you first know that you wanted to be a nurse or go into forensic nursing?
Well, I think I wanted to be a nurse. I figured that out when I was in college. My mom is a nurse, and so, hearing her talk about, some of the things that she was able to do and did in her job, and I thought, well, that's kind of cool. And then when I started, college, it was, yeah, I think this is kind of the way I want to go, and that's how I ended up in nursing. I ended up in forensic nursing. That was interesting. I was working on my master's degree. And I came across this brochure that says, hey, let's talk about forensic nursing. And then I had the opportunity to take an elective as part of my master's program, and it was in forensic nursing. And after that, I just kind of got the bug. It bit me, and I thought, wow, this is really cool, because I have always had an interest in forensic science. And I always thought, well, is there a way to you know, put forensic science and healthcare together. It was, I mean, it's forensic medicine, which you'd have to go to medical school to do all that, to be a pathologist. And that was the only thing that I knew about. And then when I heard about forensic nursing, and I thought, oh, this is cool. This is something I could do. And some colleagues and I, we took this other little class together and we said, hey, we can do this. And, you know, this is fun. We can really impact, you know, individuals and vulnerable populations. Because at the time I was working in the emergency department, and, you know, anytime someone, you know, who's been, you know, sexually assaulted or domestic violence, or that was always the cases that, or the patients that everybody else is like, I don't want to do that. You know, I like the treat them and street them, you know, we'd rather have the gunshot wounds that came in. Cause you know, we can send them to the OR in like 5 seconds and, or, you know, you're going to send the patient home quickly. And with, you know, sexual assault and domestic violence, there's a lot that's involved in just determining, is there safety, you know, what are, you know, putting safety measures in place so that someone can go home. Mm-hmm. And so those patients sometimes sat in the waiting room for hours waiting. And we said, you know, that's not right. And so we kind of got together and we said, no, let's work on this program. We got some really great ideas from this course. And that's kind of how we got started. And so,
so for the people that are listening or watching, they might hear the word forensic and either not know quite what it means, or they're thinking, you know, CSI or NCIS or something like that. Can you tell us a little bit about what forensic nursing is in a nutshell?
Sure. Forensic nurses are specially trained or educated nurses to provide care to vulnerable populations.
Okay.
And it's the only CSI stuff we do is we do have a couple of pieces of really cool equipment that we can use. And that's as far as CSI. I mean, you know, we don't solve a case in 45 minutes or we're not finished in 45 minutes.
Right. You know, with commercial breaks.
Right? Yeah, without commercial breaks.
And it's probably not as black and white as they kind of like portray it on TV too, right? You know?
Yeah. No, it's always, you know, interesting. You know, forensic nursing is a specialty in nursing. So it's a nursing specialty that was recognized by the American Nurses Association in 1995. And so from that point on, you know, we have a scope and standards of practice. So that means we have boundaries, you know, that outline what is my role and where are my boundaries and what I can do and what I can't do. We have many subspecialties within forensic nursing. So for example, there's the clinical forensic nurse, and that's what my practice really evolved into, of taking care of any type of victim of crime or violence or abuse and neglect throughout the entire lifespan. So I saw everything, or I still, you know, I consult on cases that are, you know, sexual assault, domestic violence, child abuse, elder abuse, human trafficking, you know, safety issues, assault cases. So that's kind of what clinical forensic nursing. And then there's death investigation. And I did that for a little while too. And then there's things like correctional nursing and some legal nurse consulting and sexual assault nurse examiner. That's another role. So there's a variety of subspecialties within forensic nursing. So you get a chance to really, you can move about between different specialties, and then you can pull from those other subspecialties as you build your own practice. And that's one of the things I really like about forensic nursing is the flexibility.
Yeah.
And if it was recognized in 1995, I mean, 25 years sounds like a long time ago, but it really isn't that long ago. It's a fairly newly recognized field. And I know that you, when you're talking about doing your master's, you kind of discovered this, and it was around the same time. Would it be right to say that you've been kind of at the, maybe not the tip of the spear, but the crest of the wave as this, as this new field has developed for these past 25 years?
Yes. A lot of times I didn't know what I was doing, but I was there. One of the first professional organizations for forensic nursing, the International Association of Forensic Nurses, was founded in like 92. Okay. And then I came around in 93. And then through the organization, they were working on the standards. And then, you know, so yeah, I've been there kind of from the very beginning as a part of that organization and the movement, in working with others who have been actually doing forensic nursing longer before we even called it forensic nursing, you know, and so that's been really great to be able to learn from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so before there was, you know, a certification, what was being done? I know you said that they were oftentimes waiting in the waiting room for long time, you know, I mean, was there anything that existed on how to handle those vulnerable populations, or was it just kind of, it just depends on
what it just, yeah, it kind of depended where you were and what hospital, where you were actually. As hospitals started, we really saw an explosion in forensic nursing programs, particularly those that were geared towards taking care of patients of sexual assault in the 90s. And I mean, we had just this huge explosion of programs popping up all over the place, but it was really sporadic, and you saw them in the urban areas. And so, you know, many rural areas, and even today in Texas, many rural areas do not have services, and patients have to drive hours or be taken by law enforcement hours to an urban area where there is a forensic nursing program. And you might find one in a city, you know, but we still had this huge movement, and we're still seeing that movement grow now as we expand our what the programs are doing. So we're starting to see not only just, okay, we had sexual assault was our main focus, but now we're starting to add in other populations. That's where these programs are going. They're expanding that way instead of the number.
Okay. That's really interesting. And just to humanize it further, which I think Beth just was, her question was about too, you're talking about people who have been victimized, and they've been victimized in I mean, no victimization is ever good, but these are sometimes very horrific ways, and they have to be transported very, very far. They have to be waiting a long time. That must be add to the trauma, I would think, of doing that. So the ability to see people faster or to train nurses in the forensic nursing quicker sounds like a need, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, patients have been sitting, and then it's like, yeah, we need more nurses that are invested into providing care for this population. And it's really important, because when you do travel hours and hours,
right,
say from, you know, Laredo to San Antonio, I mean, that's what, 3.5-4 hour drive. You know, that does add to the trauma, because if there is a sexual assault, then, you know, you can't change your clothes. Right. You know, they really recommend not to. They recommend not to have anything to eat or drink. I mean, until, because it could, you know, impact the exam, the medical forensic exam, and the potential evidence that could be collected. And so you have that layered on top of that trauma, and then you're there with the officer in the ER, and of course, when you walk in, everybody knows, right? Why are you there with the officer?
Of course,
and so you've got that piece, and then it's like, okay, what if the officer has to go back, or is the officer going to wait and take that person back to their community? So there's lots of different nuances that really do impact. And so being able to train nurses faster and who are competent, that's the critical piece, to be able to provide competent care and safe care. That's very, very important and critical.
Mm-hmm. So you're working on your master's and you're getting into this. So where do you go from, and tell us where you did your master's at?
I did my master's at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville.
Okay. So you finished there. And then what was next after you did your master's?
After I did my master's, I started working in developing a program.
Okay.
And then some of my mentors are like, yeah, you have to get your doctorate. I'm like, I don't want to. And then it was yes, yes, yes. And after like years of hounding me, I finally said, yes, fine. So I did that.
So that's what the DNP stands for, correct?
Yes, that's what the DNP, a doctor in nursing practice. It's a practice doctorate in nursing. And my role as a nurse that has a DNP is to take the new knowledge. So a PhD will do the big research and figure out, oh, here's the brand new knowledge, you know, that we didn't know before. And so the DNP takes that knowledge and translates it into practice. So how do I take that information and apply it to patient care? Mm-hmm. So that's what my role is as being DNP prepared.
Okay. And I imagine that's kind of how the field of forensic nursing maybe came about, because you had researchers who were looking at trauma victims, sexual assault victims, and really starting to understand all of the additional trauma they were going through during the intake process. And that it just comes full circle, you know? So now you're doing that here at A&M. So
yeah, it does. When I first started, there was no research into, it was very limited research, I should probably say. It was very limited research. And, you know, we were asking questions and there was no evidence to back up what we were thinking. And we're like, well, we all know this, but there's no evidence. And then in the last probably 15 years, we've really seen a lot more studies and information coming to light, and which has been really exciting, because now we have the evidence to base, you know, this is why I do what I do.
So you're kind of like, you're at least one of the godmothers of forensic nursing, right? You were there.
Like maybe a princess.
Yeah. You can get that on a card. Like a business
card. Yeah. Add another couple initials.
Right. You need more suffixes, yeah. Obviously, right?
I've been lucky to really learn from, individuals who have been doing the research, and learning from, you know, Virginia Lynch, who we call the mother of forensic nursing. She's actually from Texas, from Dallas, from that area. And she was working on her master's, and she's like, okay, I need to figure out a way to put this together. And she wrote in her master's thesis was the forensic clinical nurse specialist. Mm. And that was kind of like the big, oh my gosh, right. You know, really, we can, you right. know, oh, this is real cool. And so she really kind of gave it the name forensic nursing and started that movement, because she was one of the founding members of the International Association of Forensic Nurses. And so being able to talk to her and to learn from her has been really exciting.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking a little bit about the not only how new the area is, so therefore there aren't a lot of people trained in this area, but those who do realize the need and they say we do need the training. My understanding is that it takes a while to train up a forensic nurse mm-hmm. to be able to kind of go live, you know, hands-on on patients. How long does that usually take these days to train them up once they say, yes, I want to start?
Yeah, it could take upwards of about 2 years, because if you think about it, these are nurses who have other jobs. They have other full-time jobs, and being a forensic nurse is kind of that extra job. And so you have to get the extra training. So you have to go to the foundation class the week. It's a 40-hour initial training for sexual assault care. And then there's a lot of other things you have to do afterwards in order to meet eligibility criteria for certification in Texas. And that trying to get into some of those areas can be a little challenging. And as a result, it could take upwards of 2 years for nurses to become fully trained and certified in Texas.
And do you have to, is that something that like a person has to wait until after they've graduated and they're already a nurse? Is that something they have to wait to do, or can they do that as part of their schooling, like at A&M?
We have forensic information that we provide to our undergraduate students so that they are aware of populations and how to interact in a, what we call a trauma-informed manner, so that you don't blunder in and say the wrong thing,
right.
Which can be done. That's so huge, easily. Yeah. But really, if you want to focus in on the forensic nursing and that is what you want to do, it's really been recommended that, you know, you graduate and you work for a couple of years as a nurse, just to kind of get the feel of nursing and healthcare, and then move into forensic nursing, because when you get so specialized, you want to make sure that you've got that foundation and care and being able to just provide care to patients before you move into forensic nursing.
Okay. Because somebody who's a certified forensic nurse, probably depending on where they are located, they might all they do is forensic nursing, or they may be working in a hospital and do regular nursing duties and then only get called in every now and then, or is that how that works?
It's both. There are some areas where the nurses are, this is all they do.
Which I've been
very fortunate. When I first started my career, I worked in the emergency room and I was doing forensic nursing. So I never had a holiday off. So if I wasn't working the holiday in the ER, I was on call for forensics. And so for about 10 years, I'm like, I don't have a holiday. So when I got my first holiday, it was really awesome. Yeah.
But, strange, right? Like, what do I do?
It was like Memorial Day or something. And I'm like, hey, you know.
Long weekend. Yeah.
That's right. Long weekend. It's exciting. But a lot of the nurses, that's how they work. You know, they may work in the ER or the operating room or some other part of the hospital. And then they're taking call, to be called in to see forensic patients. So that's the majority of how forensic nurses practice. There are, like me, I've been very fortunate to be able to have full-time jobs in forensic nursing, which, I thought that'll never happen, but it did. And so I'm very lucky.
Mm-hmm. Is that because, I mean, besides the luck, is that also a function of demand? Meaning that if you're in an area that just sees more victimization crimes, that there's a greater need for a forensic nurse. So therefore having a forensic nurse dedicated to this type of practice makes more sense because you've got, I hate to put it crassly, but more of a steady flow of mm-hmm. the need coming in. Or is that maybe what we're hoping for eventually, but we're not quite there yet?
That's been part of the, at least my fortune, being very fortunate is that I've been in areas where the demand has been so high the numbers have been so high that it's like, it can support a full-time position. And so, and then getting your whole team to be full-time is also a trick too. But being able to do that has been, you've got to look for those areas, because if you get out into an area that has maybe one or two cases, particularly like in the rural areas, you may see 10 or 15 cases a year. That doesn't support a full-time forensic nurse. Whereas in Houston or Dallas or San Antonio, yes, you can very easily support full-time positions.
Is it pretty much just the population density as far as being an urban area that dictates the numbers of the need, if you will, or are there other factors that you've found over these past almost 25 years that say this area might have some factors that might increase the need for a forensic nurse full time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely urban areas with large populations and high crime rates are definitely, an area. We've been finding also too, along the border, there is a great need for forensic nursing as well, because we see lots and lots of individuals, not only residents of that area, but those who are coming across the border, they have been victimized as well. And so there is also, a great need for forensic nurses along, in some of those communities along the border.
And plug for the College of Nursing. Y'all have been doing really great things down near the border for years now. I remember hearing, I took a class in grad school and it was how to write a grant class. And I was with a couple ladies who were in the College of Nursing. And I think they were down in Round Rock, but we were looking at like elder abuse, and especially with people who were like family members who were taking benefits like Social Security or whatever from the elders, basically forcing these men or women to give them their checks, give them their money they held something over them that forced them to do that. But that's just, it just breaks my heart, that kind of abuse. And I think, definitely when I hear the word forensic nursing, the first thing I think about is, assault victims and domestic violence. But elder abuse certainly is definitely one of those. And there was a Netflix movie that came out not too long ago, and I think it was called I Care, something like that. But it was fiction, but it was about a woman who went in and took over an elderly person's life. And just, they picked people that didn't have a lot of family or any family, and then just took all of their money, moved them into a nursing home, that they were in cahoots with, and just took all their money. And, you know, that's the kind of abuse that you may not see because it's not like they're hitting them or harming them physically, but in other ways, you know.
Oh, you're right. There's like a kind of a con artist or a grifter type of a more complicated situation that's going on that could probably result in some physical abuse as well. But I don't want to say public policy, maybe that's the right word, but have folks who have money, let's put it that way, have folks who have money recognized the need for getting forensic nurses into urban and underserved areas? Are there grants available to support this type of work? Have you run into anything like that to support what you're doing?
Yes, absolutely. We have. HRSA, or the Health Resources Services Administration, which is a federal agency. It's under the Bureau of Workforce and they are one of the federal agencies, and they have made funds available through HRSA to help training new forensic nurses. Okay. You know, HRSA is very involved in nursing workforce expansion and increasing the workforce in general. And so we see a lot of HRSA grants going to schools and colleges of nursing. And in this area, they were venturing into how do we educate forensic nurses. So these are nurses that are already registered nurses. And so and so this was kind of their first foray into this area. And we were very fortunate to be funded one of the 16 programs that were funded in 2018 to be able to develop a program to increase the number of forensic nurses. And our focus is rural and underserved areas because that's where we have the greatest need here in our state.
Okay. And is that something that can hospitals apply for that too, or is that mostly going to towards colleges, universities?
With the grant, I think out of that 16, there were maybe three or four that were hospital-based that received funding, and then, but the majority of it did go to colleges of nursing or schools of nursing.
Yeah, tell us about the program here is, you know, the idea to impact, and how do you come up with an idea for some type of improvement and innovation, and then how do you go along that path to the impact? And it sounds like this HRSA grant was at least part of what allowed you to create this innovation, this training innovation, right? And can you tell us a little bit about that more?
Sure. Yeah. No, the HRSA grant has really been the catalyst for us because it provided us, you know, over, you know, about $1.5 million, $1.5 million is what we got just about that full amount. And it allowed us to really sit down and look and strategize, okay, what can we do to A, put nurses in rural areas to work as forensic nurses, and B, how can we help get them trained and then keep them competent? Because if you do 10 cases a year, you're not competent when case number 11 comes in. And so how do we keep them competent? How do we keep them engaged and networked? And so that was the whole premise of taking this funding and developing this program. And, you know, simulation was one of the big things that we felt was very, very important because getting to practice in that safe environment when you're, this is a whole new, brand new specialty that you're now kind of immersing yourself in, you know, nurses' comfort and confidence is not very high. Well, we use simulation with our undergraduate students a lot, and we said, well, let's pull it into forensic nursing. And we took some lessons learned from one other program that had been doing simulation that we visited. And we said, well, we're going to do that, but we're going to do it better. We're going to do it differently. And we did. We had a really structured program. We took a lot of feedback and kept expanding and making it better and better. And so now it runs like clockwork now, where we bring in a limited number of nurses. They learn the skills in over a day and a half or 2 days now because of the pandemic and the cleaning and all. So we had to have some extra time in between cases. And then we have a whole day of simulation where they are in there with patients and standardized patients and practicing the medical forensic exam and receiving immediate feedback so that when they go into the next exam, they can say, okay, well, I was told this, or I needed to do this a little bit differently. Now I can practice that. And then they receive more feedback, and then they can practice that again. And we're seeing our nurses, and we know simulation, the research shows it increases, you know, skill level and comfort and confidence. And we are seeing that in our nurses as they get out. They're much more confident when they go through their preceptorship, when they get to those sites, to have some supervised learning and actually working with real patients, that they've already done three cases under their belt. You know, this is not their first case, and they don't know what to do. They know what to do, and they're going in there much more confident with that preceptor who's saying, yeah, you're doing a great job with this, or yes, yes, yeah. And then they can get out on their own. You know, they have the tools.
And what did you said standardized patient. What does that mean?
A standardized patient is kind of an actor.
Okay.
Who plays a patient. And so we started using some of the standardized patients through our clinical learning and resource center, but we gave them extra training on how to be a forensic patient. Mm-hmm. And so we had specialized scenarios that we created from, you know, real life. You know, we kind of pulled different things from different cases and put them together. And we had about three or four different cases that we used that are pretty common, so that the nurses can at least kind of get the feel of what they, of how they need to respond.
So quite literally the feel, I guess, in my mind, and you know, as a lawyer, you think of simulation, you're doing case studies or something like that, or maybe as an MBA, you're talking about simulation, hands-on simulation in this case, right? Wow.
Yes. Yes.
And is that getting them to be more competent faster? I mean, how is the program impacting this area?
We have, so far our grant is ending this year, and we're hoping that we'll receive continued funding. But so far we have trained 129 nurses in rural and underserved areas. 16 of them have achieved certification in the state. We would have had more, except for with COVID thing, you know, those nurses were pulled back into taking care of COVID patients.
Right.
You know, and the hospitals were locked down and couldn't have visitors. And so that really impacted us for about 6 months and kind of put us behind a little bit, but we're in that recovery mode now. We've been able to really bring those nurses in, give them some intense training. And then we also did a mock testimony course too. That's part of that, that course helps them become eligible for certification. And we were doing really well at taking that 2-year period that we knew it took nurses to get to become certified. We were bringing that down to about 9 months to 12 months.
Wow.
So we were like cutting that in half for those that really were dedicated and could come to the classes. And I mean, we were cutting that down significantly.
So not only 9 to 12 months, cutting it in half or better, but I'm assuming they're more competent from go as well because of those extra simulations and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And of course, and do you have a program name for this? Is it like there's a... Do you call it something? Is it like a
on the grant we called it
special training for forensic nurses? Or
yeah, the grant we named it, you know, the Texas SANES RS program. You know, we were like, yeah, it's, you know, this is what we wanted, you know, this is what we're going to do, because you know, SANE is sexual assault nurse examiner, and so we were kind of playing on that a little bit.
SANE, sexual assault nursing examiner. SANE, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so it's the Texas SANES RS program, and so we, you know, we've been really fortunate to be able to have that funding, and then we have, you know, the university behind us with all of its resources. That, you know, everyone has been, yeah, what can we do to help you? This sounds like a fantastic project, and you know, and so we've just had such great luck with it. It's been really exciting.
Are there other schools coming to you saying, hey, can we want to use this? Like, we don't have this program, we don't have time to develop it. Can you share? Is that happening?
It's starting to. Okay. It's starting to. We created some videos through the grant of that we're using in our teaching so that students get a chance to watch an exam and then they come experience the exam and then they go and actually practice on real people. So we have it set in stages, kind of scaffolding. And we've had several universities reach out and say, hey, can we use your video? And so we're like, yeah, we'll give you access, you know, and they're like, will you sell it to us? No, not yet. We're still working on that protection piece.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have set that up in a course, and then we will give that university students access. And so they can watch that video before they go back to their communities or, you know, continue with their coursework.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So a lot of the on the path from idea to impact is that the intellectual property protection component. And are you still at that point where you're trying to do, I'm sure, copyrights, mm-hmm. maybe some trademarks, things like that? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're working on?
Okay. Yes, we're working on the copyright for that video. And then we've got a couple of other projects that we're working on. We will be putting in for either copyright or trademark, whichever is going to be the most appropriate. We're doing a project with virtual reality now, so we can layer virtual reality into the program. And then we've got a couple other things, a manual that we're working on, kind of a, you know, how to do forensic simulation and do it right. That's our next big project, to sit down and write that. And so, of course, we want to protect that as well.